You're listening to Blind Entrepreneurship, an interview series podcast that highlights the stories of the top business professionals around the world. In each episode, we explore how entrepreneurs overcame blindness in business in order to execute their vision. This podcast is brought to you by Penji. I am your host, Jonathan Grzbowski, and today we have Justin Gray on the show. He is the CEO of LeadMD. They are a bootstrapped company that has become the most successful full-service performance marketing consultancy, having helped over 3,500 organizations build scalable revenue engines. LeadMD is based on a core set of values that focuses on enabling uncommon talent and a set of marketing principles designed to create catalyst moments within their client base. Justin is also an angel investor. Throughout the entire episode, I think what you'll hear is just how polished of a business professional Justin is, and that comes from just his experience and his ability to react to that experience. And if you want to know what a well-polished entrepreneur is and what they sound like, then this is the episode that you really need to learn from. And I say polished as a positive, not as a negative. I think we all need to be more polished. There are times, and I can speak for myself on this, where I speak and when I talk in front of a large group of people, and the story is well said, of course, maybe sometimes not, who knows. But when people speak there, you can sense those who understand their business versus those who do not. And although I feel like I know the business, like the back of my hand, articulating that, I think, is at times incredibly difficult. And so if you have a hard time articulating your ideas, but not only that, articulating your story, then again, I think you're going to really enjoy this episode. Justin is the type of leader that everybody, in my opinion, should aspire to become like, and he's done it all without receiving an ounce of funding. So, you know, kudos to you, Justin, and enjoy today's episode with Justin Gray from LeadMD. Today's episode is sponsored by Penji. Are you in charge of marketing for your business and need graphic design support? Let Penji design anything you need for your business, from a logo to your marketing materials, sales sheets, social media content, and so much more. Penji helps you achieve more with unlimited graphic design support, daily output, and a dedicated project manager, all at one flat monthly rate. We have an exclusive offer to the Blind Entrepreneur community. Head over to penji.co and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month. Again, that's penji.co, P-E-N-J-I.co, and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month of Penji. And now, let's get to today's episode. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's an absolute honor to have you, and I'm really excited for the conversation. But before we get into all the fun stuff, something that is near and dear to my heart, I guess most recently, is I made cider the a couple of days ago. Okay. And I know that you have a farm. And so I'm curious to hear a little bit more about, you know, I read the bio that it's, I believe, family land, but I'd love to hear how that's going and what you're producing and what you're doing organically to feed people, but also for the environment itself.
Yeah, that's an interesting story, because the answer to that question is changing as we speak. So in 2008, I'm sure everyone's aware of what happened within those years. My father's been building custom homes out in the Phoenix area, Scottsdale, Fountain Hills more specifically, and just decided, like, hey, we need a breather from, you know, the cyclic world that is construction. And so we decided to take a chunk of family land that we've had for, you know, decades, or, you know, hundreds of years. My grandfather owned it, you know, before my parents and so on, and convert that to organic land, which takes 3 years. You have to obviously not have any sort of pesticides, fertilizer, so on and so forth. There's a big USDA process. We went through that entire certification process, and then we started growing organic field crops, which are primarily wheat, soy, and corn. And then we also have a high tunnel, which does like leafy greens and vegetables and so on, which we would sell at farmers markets. So it's kind of a hobby project for a while, but with the passage of the Farm Bill, we are now converting to full hemp. So we'll be doing actual CBD production on that land, hopefully come fall of 2020. So exciting times.
That's actually really cool. And obviously that's the complete opposite of what you do, for
Correct.
Your day to day job. But I'm Correct. Curious, are you originally from Missouri or?
My parents are.
Parents
so
are,
I was
okay.
actually born and raised in Phoenix, one of the five that can claim that, I think. And so, you know, there was kind of this, you know, I'd go back there during the summers and I'd work with my grandfather who was a farmer all of his life, literally until he died. And so got kind of a taste for that. And I think I have a certain romanticism for that area.
Very cool. Well, that's awesome. I have my girlfriend actually lives in Missouri. That's why I asked that question.
Oh, cool.
And anytime I go to Missouri, I feel like it's such a fun place to go to.
The nearest town is, people would know, is a town called Herman, Missouri, which is like the site of like the longest running Oktoberfest, I think. And
oh, nice.
There's a decent winery there. It's like a bunch of Germans, which is my
nice.
Background. So.
That's cool. So let's get right to the topics at hand. And something that you said during our pre-call was the sentence, or at least the phrase, mobilizing people around your mission. And you've grown such an incredible company, and a lot of things have to attribute to your success, but I'd like to get a better understanding of where you're at with LeadMD and why is your company at its height?
Yeah, so, you know, it's important to mention, like, LeadMD is still what I would consider to be a boutique agency, right? Like, we operate in a pretty interesting space, which is very new, which is, you know, kind of modern digital marketing or marketing operations, which came about as a result of the whole marketing technology boom, which started in probably like 2007, 2008, really started to catch on in you know, 2010, 11, so on around there, like the growth of Marketo and Eloqua and so on. Mm-hmm. So I was an early customer of those particular softwares and Salesforce.com. Was fortunate enough to sell my piece of equity within a startup and kind of didn't know what I wanted to do next. And so naturally a couple people reached out and said, hey, can you do for us what you did at, you know, this former organization, which was a payments technology company, where I had essentially built a sales and marketing technology stack and all of the process and things like that that needed to be automated on top of it. And as that space grew, you know, we kind of grew with it. So LeadMD is an absolute accidental business for me, which has become almost a passion project, I think. You know, as you mentioned, as we were talking earlier, this is a people-based business, and I've never been a part of one of those before. You know, the agency world of kind of selling time for money and also trying to break that equation and start really selling value. And so that's what I think is it sets LeadMD apart. Like, we've tried to productize as much of our service since day one as possible. We also focus on what I would call performance or value outcomes, right? Like, what are you trying to do within your business and not just, hey, could you design this email or put together this messaging, but really, you know, what are you trying to achieve? And that's our core mission. So we don't do anything in the silo. Like, you can't pay us to come in and just run your AdWords campaign or send an email. Like, there has to be a true business objective behind it. You know, we're trying to launch this product, or we're trying to drive X dollars in revenue through marketing. And I think that's a really unique perspective, especially when you look at the world of marketing ops, which can be such a black hole of investment these days. Like, everyone is still buying so much technology. They are, you know, there's largely no certification out there to explain who's an expert and who's not. And therefore, it becomes a really risky gamble. And I think, you know, the secret to our quote unquote success is absolutely putting value forward. I mean, we've got an NPS score of 82 under one business line and 78 under a different business line. So, like, that's incredibly difficult. I've had clients like, show me the data that you guys are calculating this correctly. And we are. And I think that speaks to, you know, the passion of our folks, the focus on delivering something that has value, kind of that golden rule delivery, and really ensuring that we're making an impact. And so that's a really difficult thing to scale. And I think since day one, we've been charged with trying to make that a reality.
I would say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that your approach is more or less like a white glove service. Would you say it's relatively true?
Correct. Yeah. I'd say that, you know, we're the most, it's interesting to see the relationships between our consultants and our clients, because oftentimes there's not only friendships there, but there's like, I've seen things go sideways on a weekend that has nothing to do with what we're engaged with. And still that phone call happens. Yeah. And there's an immediate response there, right? Like, you can't pay people to do that. You can't tell them, like, this is what you're going to do and then have them follow that. That's instinctual.
So was LeadMD always a white glove service?
I would say yes. I think that we've suffered from a bit of, you know, me not knowing how to run an agency in the early days, right down to not even knowing how to price. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, individually, maybe I'd charge $100 an hour, $120 an hour. And so that was like our pricing out of the gate. Like our pricing is $300 an hour now. So there was always kind of in the early days, this conflict between the size of engagements that we were taking, what we were charging for them, and the service that we were delivering. Like, the service was always white glove, but the perception was not always so within the marketplace. And I was really surprised by that when I started to hear that around like 2012, 2013. And then we decided to make a big intentional shift in the business and you know, just raise prices, raise the size of engagements, and really challenge ourselves, like, what are we trying to accomplish here? Implementing this technology is not enough. It's hurting our brand, actually. So how do we latch on to those really deep-rooted value centers with, like, again, driving revenue, understanding the customer, things that every business needs to do, but rarely do they approach an agency with those things in mind. They tell them, hey, I need this item completed, right? Like, and that's the metric that they hold them accountable for.
Churn is something that is incredibly near and a word near and dear to my heart, constantly trying to solve that ongoing issue of people leaving your company. And I know it's something that you're pretty passionate about. But I'd like to hear from you, I guess, from the beginning, what was your churn like, I guess, without the understanding and knowledge of what you have now versus the more polished from what it seems, the more polished white glove service to what you deliver to your customers now?
Yeah, I think that fortunately, since day one, we've always found people that were willing to make a big investment within us. And, and you know, in kind, we've always tried to make a big investment in return. And when we say the word churn, a lot of times what comes to mind is like, you know, a quick entry and exit, right? Like, oh, the customer came on for a year, contract went to renew, and they churned out. Like, the churn is any sort of leaving, right? Like, and that's really what I didn't understand early on, which is like, even if someone stays with us 5 years, when they leave, it's going to be even more painful. And to think about someone staying in a job 5, 6, 7 years in this current environment is for most people a dream, right? Like, man, if we could retain employees that long, that would be awesome. Like, when we lose an employee at 5 years, like, it really, really stings. And so the investment that we've continued to make and more intentionally, like, you know, in the early days, I would think of HR as like maybe a function that we can get rid of or a function that we can automate, right? Like, and I was like Zenefits, like very, very early customer, like in the 20s of customers. And, you know, it was like, oh, great, we can just replace this with this automation, you know, like these electronic signatures and so on. But HR is a completely different function. And we've been really focused on making investments like that. We have a VP of people, which does perform some HR functions, but really is here for the collective culture of the organization. Like, they steward that culture and they make sure that it doesn't become like the typical rah-rah speech and you know, the you know, item painted on the wall and you know, murals around the office and so on. Are we really living and breathing what we need to? Are we holding ourselves accountable? I think that's you know, one of the area or elements that we try to use to combat churn. Also, like from day one, like we've never not done fully paid insurance for our employees. We've never not had a 401k, you know, program with employee matching and immediate vesting. So like those are programs that, like, when I was an employee, I would look at and say, like, why are people nickel and diming on these areas? And it, when you own a business, you certainly understand why, right? Like, our maternity policy right now is another one of those. We provide up to, so we do 2 months of paid, an additional month of hold your job, right? As an agency, that is more painful than you can ever believe. I've got two folks that went on maternity leave the same day, like 2 months ago. So to have to be two people down, to be paying those people while you're also paying new people to come on and service those hours, that's a really, really difficult equation. So you can certainly see why other businesses would want to cut costs in those areas. But I think that type of difficult decision and reinforcing that and showing that very publicly is the walk that companies need to walk.
And you, from your experience, the investment in people is contributing to the success of your clients staying. That's kind of what I'm hearing.
I mean, our clients' happiness and our clients' retention rates are directly tied to our ability to retain our own people. So yeah. Yes. And you know, like, have we cracked the code on this? Absolutely not, right? Like, sure. We still will lose an employee from time to time. I think that what that has taught me is more about, like, you can delay the inevitable, but if you're not 100% aligned at the time of hiring in terms of what that person wants to do, which is difficult, right? Because you've got an entire generation, myself, you know, they have a new name for my generation now, which is, you know, Zennials, you know, like this weird 5-year period or whatever, that kind of have the traits of the bookend generations. But like, millennials certainly have been raised, find your passion, chase that, right? Like, I don't know too many people that, you know, as a kid, we're like, man, I want to work at an agency. There's elements that maybe they would have wanted in that process. But I think, so it's difficult to find someone that's like, hey, are you passionate about this? But my passion and what I want the business to stand for is this being a changing point in your life, because I had that experience. Like, I would be working dead end marketing jobs to this day, I think, if someone hadn't given me a chance to come into a company, take quote unquote true ownership. And I think anyone that's really had ownership knows what that term feels like. Anyone that's just been saddled with it, like, hey, go own this, it's impossible to relate to that. So you have to be in an experience where someone says, you own this, don't, you know, come back successful, don't screw it up. I think those are the situations that allow people to get true equity within the company. And right now, 50% of the company is reserved for our employees, right? Like, if we were to sell tomorrow, 50% of that would go into our employee pool. Everyone has equity in the company.
That's interesting.
So that's, you know, and I think that that's a good program, but it really needs to be, like, in what we're doing right now is tailoring that. Like, what do you want to get out of this? Because some people just want to get, you know, I want to solve really hard problems. I want to build my resume. Like, knowing that up front and trying to foster that honesty is the point where we're at right now. And I think
so
that's,
you do
really
ask that question. Sorry,
correct.
I don't mean to cut you off. You ask that question in the very beginning.
Correct. Yeah. And whether we get an honest answer or not, like, I think, you know, again, that's my entrepreneurial optimism. Like, why won't you just tell me what you want? But I think that you have to kind of prove that out over the first 12 months before someone will really kind of come back and say, okay, I'm ready to tell you the answer to that question, the true answer.
Yeah. It's funny because we actually asked a very similar question, a little bit more, I'd say, millennial of us to ask this, but we say that we ask the question, what is your dream and how can we help you accomplish it? But it's, you know, similar aspects. You want to be able to understand what the motivating factor is in order to make sure that that person that is now an employee is able to meet a maximum performance as frequent as possible because they have that motivating factor.
Yeah. Yeah. And the company that the guy kind of got my shot out, it was, why do you work? And we had this big workbook, right? Like, and you could thumb through it and see, you know, hey, the CEO, like, why does he come into work every day? I think everyone's trying to get after the same, you know, soft GUI center, which is like, just tell us what you're trying to achieve and how we can enable you to do so. I think we try to bring in the notion of, like, how long do you see yourself here? to put it on the table that, like, if you ever feel like you want to leave, like, please have a conversation with us about that. And let's mm-hmm. put a plan in place. I was talking to a really old school dude, having dinner with him like a couple weeks ago. And he, you know, was telling the story of, you know, how he came up in this big influential job and so on. And he gave them a year's notice before he left. He was president of the company, but still, like, that's the mentality that I want to try to foster, which is like, okay, if this stops aligning to where you want to go, or you don't see yourself here any longer, like, let's have a really intentional conversation around, can we change that? Or if not, what is the best way to even find you a new job, or find you, you know, that kind of fire again? That's ultimately our goal right now. And I think we're, you know, as we look into 2020, like, a lot of our programs are being designed around, you know, how do we get closer to that goal?
Yeah, that's huge. I want to hear a little bit more, if that's okay, about the experience that your customers are able to obtain. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously you have your employees and your team members working at optimal levels and being able to understand you know, their value in the company, et cetera, et cetera. But then there's the element of, like, well, your customers have to feel a certain way too in order to to maintain. And in addition to results, personally, I think that, and you can speak to this, that results do matter, yes, but people will be okay with receiving mediocre and moderate results and work with a really good company that is good at communication and understands you, than no communication and a ton of results. That's just my opinion. You can speak to that, but I'd like to hear the experience that you're delivering from a service level that maybe people can listen to today and be able to take at least a couple of nuggets for them to apply in their business.
Yeah. So I don't know necessarily if I agree or disagree with you. I think that probably the defining factor for me is, does that relationship exist across the customer organization? Meaning that, you know, yes, it's great to, you know, in our early days really taught us this, like, the how we sell an engagement and how we transition that into delivery is probably the most critical element of our business, right? Like, being able to fulfill on quote unquote those promises that are made. I think that sales within an agency environment is often looked upon as a four-letter word. It simply because everyone, you know, hey, yeah, we'll give you the world. It'll be done next Tuesday. Right, and then you get thrown over to delivery and it's like, what? Someone said what? So that's a really critical point to us. And so by focusing on that, I think there's a couple of dimensions there. Number one, not losing the alignment that you have during that sales process. So if you've been engaged with, you know, an executive, a VP, a CMO, whoever it happens to be, like in our business, it's most often the CMO, but we really need alignment to the president or CEO as well. Keeping that alignment and keeping that understanding, because we get transitioned into delivery and we form these new relationships very much at the ground level. And we'd find ourselves doing exactly what you mentioned, which is really great work, really great communication. And then suddenly the retainer would get ripped out from underneath us. We'd ask them, like, hey, what's going on? Well, we lost budget. Because, you know, so-and-so didn't see value in what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And we were doing exactly what the client was asking us to do, but we weren't impacting metrics or measures that executive who was making the budget was really focused on. So yeah. I think you have to align, you know, across the organization, you have to balance that, and you almost have to become a steward between those two often silos, because marketing above anything else is still looked at as the arts and crafts department. It's still like, you know, we don't know what they're doing in there, but whatever it is, it's not yielding results. And so even if it's just translating, hey, what are we doing, back to the management of the executive layer, and really explaining that and showing the value in that, I think oftentimes that becomes our value add in that process. So, you know, it really does have to be something that you look at across the client organization and say, what relationship do we have to have at each level to ensure that not only that we're delivering value, but that we're communicating that value?
Putting on your marketer's hat for a very brief moment, you mentioned metrics, and I'm curious to hear from you what are some metrics, and again, given the caveat that it's going to be different from company to company, but sure. Maybe just like high level, what are some metrics that you believe most small businesses, startups, and even medium-sized businesses are just not focusing enough energy or attention on?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the reason for that lack of focus is important to bring into the conversation as well. So number one, revenue. You know, what are we achieving with what we're producing, right? Like whether that's events, whether it's digital, whether it's paid in, across marketing, how is it influencing pipeline and closed pipeline? Secondarily, you know, customer retention, advocacy, like how well is our customer channel performing for us as a cheerleader, as someone that's sourcing new business and someone that's staying around for a really long time. I think the other element there is kind of what I summed up within our NPS score, which is just satisfaction. You know, how well are they satisfied during the buying process and then the ultimate customer process? Like those three metrics, like most businesses on the planet, from nonprofit down to B2B software, down to, you know, B2C e-commerce, like everyone's going to be focused on at least one of those three metrics. And I think, again, being a champion for marketing, being involved in that conversation is a really interesting area and a kind of a standard for us to bear. Oftentimes we will find if that's an unwelcome standard, that's not a good account for us. And so we try to weed that out in that early process, like as we go through like the really interesting conversations. And, you know, like if you want to have an interesting conversation with your business, I mean, you know, all of your employees, ask them, who do we sell to, and see what those different answers are coming back. Like yeah. our answer that we really try to standardize around are innovation minded marketers, you know, folks that want to be catalysts within their organization for change. If you're not looking to change something, you're probably not the best client for us, because yeah. we'll be looking to change something. And then that reaction is sometimes violent, where, you know, someone's like, hey, I just want to beat the status quo. I've tucked in here. This is my 20th year. And I just don't want to rock the boat. Like, that's not a good engagement for us, because number one, our folks won't feel fulfilled. Number two, our value proposition goes right out the window. And so, you know, I think those are the learnings that you really start to think through as you've been in business for a while. But I would say those metrics that I mentioned are kind of our challenges to number one, influence, but number two, align with our customers on.
How often do you turn away business because it's just not the right fit?
I mean, that metric is probably a lot more than our system would even show, because a lot of those folks don't even make it into like any sort of sales cycle. I would say there's probably a good 25% of like pre-sales deals that kind of derail at that point. But it's probably 50% if I were to look at the full conversation and track that in some sort of a system.
Yeah, that's interesting. I want to talk about NPS, because I think NPS is a saving grace from our personal business. And it seems as if that you hold that metric to a very high standard in yours.
Yes.
How do you collect NPS from, I guess you can go at a, I'm going to assume a lot of people know what NPS is. So Net Promoter Score. How do you track it? We'll just go base level. Like, how do you track it? And then, when you look at these numbers, like, how do you know when to make a decision or act accordingly?
Yeah. So I think the important thing to know about our business is that, our client satisfaction, there's both an overall element and one that's also very tied to a project or the engagement that we're currently delivering. So we measure on both of those. We have an overall client satisfaction survey that goes out, and it's NPS focused with another question. So we do the typical 1 through 10 rating, and you know, our promoters are your 9s and 10s, right? Like everything else essentially becomes either a neutral or a detractor. And we present that generally once a year, and then at the end of each project. And so when we get the metrics back, we can also see like, how is that general happiness? And then how is something as it relates to an initiative? And that other question there is like, what impact did we make in your business? Like, you know, how are we really measured? How are you assigning value to us? And so with those two dimensions, it's really interesting to see, you know, number one, how an initiative can shape a relationship, right? Like you can have the greatest relationship in the world, but it is a bit of what have you done for me lately? So when you see like that, and frankly, we talk about NPS, we talk about CSATs and measures of client satisfaction. You can measure client satisfaction a lot of times just by talking to the employees that are working with that customer, certainly within an agency, because they may feel like, yeah, I don't know. This, what we're providing to them just isn't landing. I feel like we're not aligned, or they shifted the entire project midway and now we feel like we're playing catch up. Like those are all recipes. Like we've got kind of these red flags that, that rise. And I think unfortunately in our business, that's where you'll see a lot of like email chatter flying around. Like, hey, what's going on with this? Like, how do we right this ship? So I think it's how you respond to that can either be really ineffective or effective. And I don't know that we certainly have not cracked the code on being 100% there.
Yeah,
but
sure.
You could also get that insight just by talking and being around employees. Like right now, I'm probably more involved in delivery than I have been in the last year, just because we have so much open headcount and so much ongoing work, and it's so interesting to see that those variables and those dimensions, and just kind of get a really hand on the pulse. Perspective from being in the delivery team versus getting feedback from delivery leaders. And you know, my delivery leaders are going through the same thing at this point. Like they're very involved in client delivery. So I do think that a distant proxy for doing NPS surveys or whatever you choose to do is talking to employees and really getting a good feel for how do they feel about the engagement. Do they feel like we're delivering on the original charge? Do they know what that original charge was? So I think there's a lot of different things that you can measure. We do have an employee NPS as well, which I think is another one of those things that can be kind of a false positive, because no matter how many times you tell someone it's anonymous, like I don't think that they ever truly believe that. Ours truly is, but it's one of those areas that I think it's you have to measure both sides of the equation there, both the employee and the customer.
And from a technology perspective, is there anything that you'd recommend to collect NPS?
I think if you're spending more than like $1,000 a month on NPS, like you're overpaying like insanely crazy amounts. Like for a long time, we used a $10 a month NPS survey, and I'm going to screw it's called Delighted. And it did just fine. You know what I mean? Like it sends out a 1 to 10, client clicks on it in the email and you get the results back. Now we've developed our own because we wanted to be more integrated into our CRM system. But like it's the cheapest metric I think that you can measure. Like fortunately, unlike a lot of these other systems, you don't have to go out and spend, thousands or tens of thousands of dollars to do it. It's super simple.
Yeah, that's cool. You said that you turn away a decent amount of business, but you also have a very interesting sales funnel or approach, however you want to call it. I'd like to hear what are some really good ways to get customers? Sales is probably one of the thing that everybody has different tactics and strategies on. And if you're able to understand sales, even just a little bit, any help can be beneficial to a business. So what are some ways that maybe if you want to even speak to the beginning of how you got it and then versus how being a little bit more seasoned now, how are you obtaining leads and customers, and are they relatively the same way?
Yeah, most agencies are going to have a really interesting relationship with sales. Most agencies are feast or famine, right? Like they get a big client in the door, and then it's service that client until maybe that client tailors off or scales down, and then they have to go fishing again. So again, not knowing anything about being the head of an agency was probably my best or was my fortunate accident in that case, to where, all I knew was software. And I built the teams like a SaaS sales team. A lot of our programs mirror SaaS contracts, meaning our retainers are annual and we have the notion of both MRR and ARR. And so building a sales team that was dedicated at all times to finding new revenue was second nature to me. I think what was not second nature is how wide the disconnect can be between sales and delivery within an agency, because regardless of the alignment that you have in the sales process, I hate to say it, but frankly, the customer is always going to try to use any point of disconnect or any point of unclarity to their advantage. Like, no, we talked about that, that you guys were going to do that for us. Even if it's not reflected within a scope of work, when you're a customer first organization, you want to make that client happy. And so, you know, I think agencies walk a really fine line between finding the right sales talent that's going to, where their delivery teams or their other teams within the organization are going to trust them. And so I do think that when you look at our sales reps, they're not typical sales folks. And we have hired typical sales folks in the past, and that's probably the biggest differentiator between the early days and current days. And my sales guys have been, like my most tenured sales guy's coming up on his 6th year. The other one's coming up on its 4th year. And then I got one that's like a brand new guy that's been in there for just over a year. Hmm. So we retain salespeople for a really long time. And I think that's
rare.
I think that speaks to the skill sets that we're looking for in these folks, because they have to be, to a degree, hunters and farmers, and they have to be an advocate for the delivery team first. And I think as a business, you have to create scenarios that don't cause conflict between their take home or their commission and doing what's right for the business. And so I think I've always overcompensated our sales team as a means of creating that balance, so that yes, you're hungry, you want to go out and win new deals, but you also are highly incentivized to keep that existing customer happy and board customers that are going to become, you know, second project customers, third project customers, retainer customers. We pay our sales reps in perpetuity on that. Not even just year one, year two, year three. I don't wait to get paid to pay my reps. That's a big agency, fork in the road there. Like, most agencies wait until they've got money in hand in order to pay their salespeople. I don't do that. Mm-hmm. So I think there's things that you can do to align the sales team to the behaviors that you want to see. And that's the biggest challenge there, certainly. Like, we hired a lot of folks in the early days that were software sales folks that worked for the partners that we were delivering services on behalf of, like Marketo's. And they're just a different breed than someone that sells professional services or agency work. So that's been a big learning for us.
I can imagine. I mean, just listen to you talk. I love your approach to business, to life, and it's incredibly inspiring. So I'm incredibly grateful for your time with us. And I just have a couple of questions, more questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, totally.
Some things that come to mind. I'm listening to you talk and I'm like, man, this is a guy who knows this stuff, can get into a meeting and not necessarily rant the way I am ranting right now to deliver this question to you. but like, how quick, do you have long meetings in your business?
Oh man. Great. Great.
Like topic. You going into a sales meeting, are you going into like a, to talk to your employees? Like, what is your time structure like, from in meetings?
So, I tweeted a while back that, hey, I was going to start spot bonusing for meetings that ended early. and I get a ton of crap on that, you know, from my folks internally. And so I think we all have a really interesting relationship with meetings, right? Like a lot of times getting face to face and leveraging that time, certainly in a business that has a remote component to it, about 25% of us are remote, is incredibly valuable. So how you go into that meeting and how you structure that and how you create the agenda and how you define, like, what are we going to walk away from this meeting with is just as important as what you discuss in the meeting. And I think that's the big learning there for me, which is, you know, a lot of folks treat a meeting like a way to get alignment. Like, you have to have that alignment going into that meeting and be aligned on what are the problems, what are you trying to accomplish, what are we going to walk away with. So there's a lot of prep that goes into that. I think most people tend to use meetings as just like this, hey, this is going to solve everything. Let's just meet on this, put it on the calendar for Friday. And then they don't do any work leading up to that meeting whatsoever. I think the big thing that I've learned is the amount of preparation that goes into that is probably much longer than the meeting. And if you do it, that's really what's going to cause, you know, value to come out of that exchange. Mm-hmm. When I'm in a meeting, like every founder, my first reaction is talk too much and, you know, probably stifle a lot of innovation within that by talking. And so like even this week, like we're headed into to 2020, like I don't know if you know or not, but I had a kid on Monday.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Why I'm in the office today is you know, like a different debate. I think that, but all week, like there have been some really important meetings that were scheduled ahead of time. And I didn't think this all was going down until Wednesday. So Monday was a really thick meeting day for me and some really important meetings. And I think seeing what was able to get accomplished, even without me there, and then really just kind of fostering some of the innovation that happens coming out of that I'm getting secondhand or I'm getting via updates, is just reinforcement that if you're hiring the right people and you're enabling them with the vision and you're enabling them with what we have to go do, once they're aligned, like people can solve problems. Like I can always jump in and help guide something or help solve a problem. But I think teams can do, you know, really critical employees can do a lot more than we give them credit for when it comes down to the really important decision. So we're always walking that line and trying to maintain that balance. But that is my number one challenge, certainly as a founder, which is knowing when to jump in and knowing when to jump out.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, last point that I want to at least ask about when you said, and we're kind of coming full circle here because we started with the mobilization and we're kind of ending in that.
Yep.
Any techniques, knowing that your workforce is 25% remote, is there anything that you feel as if that works really well? I mean, you mentioned getting in and getting out at the right time, but maybe just a little bit more practical advice of just like a nugget or a tidbit. What are some things that you do in order to maintain that level of care and making sure that your foot is consistently on the throttle at all times?
So I think two things come to mind there, and they're both really difficult things for me because I'm not a chit chat guy. I'm not a small talk person. Like I'm not the, hey, let's walk around the office for the first 45 minutes and like get updates on everyone's weekend.
Yeah.
But quite frankly, with employees that are in the office and out of the office, you do have to make time for that. And so like, that's one of the things that, you know, like people don't talk enough about. I think we see people like, you know, Elon Musk and so on. And everyone's like, man, they just, you know, they gravitate towards the behaviors that founders have to have. Like a lot of the very visible behaviors that founders have are really bad behaviors, you know, and I naturally have pretty much all of them. Like being gregarious, being loud, being like coming in and like, this is the solution, go do it. And then like breezing out and so on. It's the conversation and the personal time that like really motivates people and gets them moving in the same direction with you. So even though you may perceive that, you know, coming in and being like this force of nature is really what's driving your business and it's inspiring people, a lot of times it's frankly just knowing what they're going through, what their challenges are, like giving them space to share those and the ability to have that forum back and forth. So I think that's, you know, that personal touch and so on is really critical there. The second is actually super easy, but I think it's also something that laziness can really thwart, which is just making sure that, you know, you're sharing your face whenever possible and you're using whatever, you know, via whatever meeting software you use. We use Zoom. So just making sure that you're taking that extra step to say, hey, let's make sure we have at least some face time. Like we're separated by thousands of miles, but let's do this. And then going through the expense to bring people into shared locations whenever possible. We do our team week at least twice a year. And it's gotten really expensive, obviously, because like for Christmas, we'll fly everyone and their spouse in. Locally, we everyone and their spouse is welcome to come to the Christmas party and stay. So like those types of investments, I think are secondary, right? Like just on a day-to-day basis, like make sure that you are you know, having that direct line of sight. You can see the whites of someone's eyes. And then if you have the, you know, like, or I should say, find the ability to bring people together and it will absolutely pay off.
Love it. Awesome, man. It was an absolute honor to have you on. And I love the way you operate. And for people that are listening and they agree with me and they believe the same things that I believe, how can people learn more about you? How can people become a customer take part in your journey through entrepreneurship and life?
Yeah, well, first, thank you. I very much appreciate you having me on. I am super active on LinkedIn, super active on Twitter. Hit me up on either one of those. I'm at jgraymatter on Twitter. And you just search me, you know, Justin Gray on LinkedIn. You'll find me there. I'm happy to connect at any time. I'll send you over my calendar link. Let's have a chat like yourself. Like I really enjoy having conversations with really anyone because I think it's probably the most insightful exchange of my day. So happy to connect with anyone that reaches out. If you want to check out LeadMD, absolutely leadmd.com. You know, again, I talked about like value forward services. Like we will dive in, create a business model, create a business plan and figure out, does it make sense for us to work together? If it does, great. We'd love to help.
Very cool. And congratulations again on the newborn. Absolutely.
Thank
awesome.
You. Appreciate it. Little girl Cheers. This time. So get a boy and a girl.
There you go. Congrats again.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Blind Entrepreneurship. Your time, energy, and attention mean the absolute world to me. Thank you. Because you're still listening, even though the episode is technically over, that means that you're a super listener and you care even further about what I have to say, and that means even more to me. And because of that, I'd love to be able to give you a small gift. As you know, I am the co-founder of Penji, and I personally believe that Penji is one of the best creative services on the planet. It gives you the ability to free up your time in order for you to focus more on your business, so you let us do all the graphic design support and all the graphic design help in an on-demand fashion. And because you're listening to this portion of the episode, I'd love to be able to give you 50% off of your first month of Penji. In order to do that, all you have to do is enter the coupon code TBEshow. That's TBEshow for 50% off. Again, I truly believe that Penji is revolutionizing the creative industry. And if you feel at any point in time that your business is not getting the graphic designs that you deserve, or if you ever feel like you're paying too much for your graphic design team or your freelancers, or you're finding it difficult to find reliable talent, we'd love for you to give us a try. And again, that is TBEshow for the coupon code. And as always, I have to end every conversation with the key phrase that has started it all. Go out there and execute your vision, everybody. Have a great rest of your day.